Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, November 28, 2016. The UN Special Representative to South Sudan urges the international community not to abandon South Sudan.
You might be tired of the politicians of this country who have inflicted this conflict on the people of South Sudan. But engage with them, try to convince them that the peace agreement has to be implemented. We cannot give up on South Sudan.
And a former top South Sudanese official accuses President Kiir and the rebels of showing zero interest in solving the country's problems.
They have this culture of war whereby they see political solutions are rare to come by, so they would want to pursue military struggle, which is violence.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Special Representative of the Secretary General to South Sudan, Ellen Margaret Loge, says she is immensely disappointed that the hopes and dreams of the South Sudanese have gone unfulfilled. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
Ellen Margaret Loge says tens of thousands of South Sudanese continue to flee their homes and live as internally displaced persons or refugees in neighboring countries due to the ongoing conflict and worries about the threats they face wherever they live. Loy, who steps down as the UN Special Representative in South Sudan this week, is calling on the international community not to abandon South Sudan.
Do not give up on South Sudan, because the people of South Sudan deserve the focus of the international community. You might be tired of the politicians of this country who have inflicted this conflict on the people of South Sudan. But engage with them, try to convince them that the peace agreement has to be implemented. We cannot give up on South Sudan.
She says the UN and its partners will continue to support religious leaders, traditional chiefs, and local civil society organizations in their effort to restore peace across the country. Loy calls the situation in South Sudan heartbreaking and is pleading with the South Sudanese to learn how to live in peace with one another.
You South Sudanese really, really work hard on reconciling among yourself. Remind yourself on a daily basis that all the suffering you went through in the independence war was to get one independent South Sudan. One independent South Sudan. And that you are South Sudanese regardless of your ethnic affiliation.
Loy notes that in her 2.5 years of service in South Sudan, all she has seen is insecurity and economic woes. Loy is appealing to South Sudan's leaders to silence the guns and recommit themselves to fully implementing the peace deal in order to restore the hopes of South Sudanese people.
We have not yet finished our job. We don't have peace in South Sudan. We don't have prosperity in South Sudan. But I think we all have to work for that. I'm extremely moved by having learned so much about South Sudan. I'm extremely impressed by the resilience of the South Sudanese people. I'm extremely depressed that their hopes and aspiration at their time of independence has not yet been fulfilled.
Loy says the United Nations mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, was caught in the crossfire between warring parties, and UNMISS personnel often found it difficult to provide protection to vulnerable civilians.
The challenge has been that there is no peace in South Sudan. The challenge has been that we have had difficulties in moving around, both from the government side and the IO side. The challenge has been that the government thought we were too close to the IO at the height of the fighting, and the IO thought we were too close to the government. So, as I say, I've been slapped right, left, and center.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon appointed Ellen Margaret Loy, a Danish citizen, as his special representative in South Sudan in July 2014. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
A former senior government official in the Kiir administration says the transitional government of national unity is not implementing the 2015 peace deal. The chairman of the Federal Democratic Party says President Kiir is not interested in resolving the political crisis in South Sudan. Like others before him, Gabriel Changston says the peace agreement has collapsed and the international community should create another forum for negotiating South Sudan's power struggle among the leaders of the country's warring parties.
Many people are actually forced to war. They have this culture of war whereby they see political solutions are rare to come by, so they would want to pursue military struggle, which is violence.
Why do South Sudanese like to settle their disputes through the use of guns? Why are you not talking to each other and negotiating? For instance, right now, why are you opting to fight the government of President Kiir as opposed to sitting down with President Kiir? You worked with him before for 7 years.
In any political grievances, there are two ways in resolving them. And that political struggle is always successful when the government of the day provides political space for everybody, so that the struggle would be ideas. Who can present the best options, who can present the best ideas in solving general problems?
And what are the best ideas from your political party? What are the ideas that you have on the table to end the crisis in the country?
Yeah, for us, South Sudan is for all South Sudanese. That fact must be accepted. If it is for all South Sudanese, then we have to accept our diversity. Mm-hmm. Diversity in cultures, diversity of ethnicity, diversity geographically, diversity in our languages. So geographically, we are one country with 64 tribes. If the government of the day, or if South Sudanese can constitute a government that unites all those diversities, then everybody will feel free that the country is ours. The best way of resolving our problems would be to go for a genuine federal system. Genuine federal system will help us in resolving the ongoing crisis.
How would you react to people who are saying that most of South Sudanese politicians, all they want is a post in the government? Once they get it, they are comfortable. Once they are kicked out of the government, that's when they rebel and form a group to fight the government.
Well, that may be the general statement, but it is not everybody. And that is why we want to make sure that plain playground is provided for everybody. For instance, if we were to be looking for positions, I would have been in the forefront to go to Juba early this year. And I'm sure I would have a position. But to me, position without addressing the real issues that are confronting the country is nothing.
The Kiir administration will say the environment in Juba is conducive for everybody. You people opt not to go.
Well, if it is before that, we were not part of that agreement because we felt that the agreement has a lot of loopholes which will not make it sustainable.
And we predicted
that there will be another fight in Juba, which we call Juba Massacre 2. Which actually happened. The bodyguards of the three leaders of the South, President Kiir, Dr. Riek, Brother Waniga, their bodyguards fought the bloody war in which we were told over 300 of them died. Why? And they were in a meeting. Why? It's because We have been saying all along that there is mistrust, division within the presidency, and that it will be very difficult for them to reconcile the country. Now people talk of peace, that everybody should lay down their guns, go for peace. We are for that. But it takes two to tangle. How do we go to peace if the government is not interested, if the region is not interested, if the international community is not interested? They are only interested to see that you go in, sort out whatever is there, and then you go. How do you sort out these difficulties?
That's Gabriel Changston Chung, chairman of the Federal Democratic Party. He was speaking to my colleague John Tanza in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Tomorrow, Changston offers his economic prediction for South Sudan. The officer in charge at the Bidibidi refugee settlement in Uganda's Yumbe district says ethnic divisions among South Sudanese refugees are undermining operations at the camp. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from Yumbe district, Uganda.
Most South Sudanese immigrants are descendants of the Sudanese who first came to Uganda toward the end of the 19th century as soldiers attached to the German explorer Emin Pasha or members of the King's African Rifles, a British colonial regiment comprised of soldiers from territories in then British East Africa. James Taban fled his village in Pagheri in South Sudan's eastern equatorial region following the outbreak of Sudan's first civil war in 1955. Now in his late 60s, Taban is a resident of Uganda's Kayunga district. Speaking in Mali, he says when southern Sudanese troops mutinied in Torit in 1955, trouble quickly spread to his village, where a mob attacked and killed a northern Sudanese official.
After an Arab was killed in our area, the authorities arrested my father and many people in our village and took them to Torit. Before he left, my father gave instruction that I and my brother Aruga leave the village at once and go to Jinja in Uganda.
Taban says he arrived in Jinja, about 80 kilometers from Kampala, as a young boy in his early teens. He says his first job was for a British mechanic working for the Kilembe mines. Taban says 2 years later, he moved to Kampala and remained there for 12 years, doing various odd jobs for Indians. He returned to Jinja towards the end of the 1960s as a supervisor at an Indian company supplying construction materials to other companies. When the company built the hospital in Kayunga and later a road connecting the town to Jinja, Taban settled with his new Ugandan wife in the district where he has remained for more than 40 years. Taban says he has never returned to his village in Pagheri, although he hopes to take his 9 children there one day.
Even if I cannot take all of them, I still wanted to go with one or two children so that they get to know our village and relatives. But the problem now is that I do not know anybody there and nobody in the village remembers me.
Taban says the arrival of many other Mali people in Jinja over the years has enabled him to continue to speak the Mali language, but he concedes none of his children understands the language. His family communicates in Luganda, the language of the inhabitants of the Buganda Kingdom. 62-year-old Ibrahim Lincoln Noah, a resident of Bombo, a small town about 30 kilometers from Kampala, says he learned about his origin from his grandfather, who came to Uganda as a young man.
My grandfather told me he was a Bari. Those stories he used to tell us. And they came from Sudan around Juba.
The inhabitants of Bombo descended from Sudanese immigrants. Most of them, including Hassan Hussein Musa, come from the equatorial region.
My grandfather, the late Musa Bobur, migrated from Kyojikeji. He came, stayed in Arua, he bought land there, and eventually he came to Bombo, bought land here. Until his death, actually, his family was divided. Some remained in Arua and others came this way.
When conflict intensified in Sudan in the early 1960s and refugees began fleeing into Uganda, a group of students sheltered in Bombo. University of Juba professor Alfred Sebit Lokuji was among them. Lokuji, who lives in Bombo, says many new refugees are surprised to hear the story of the people of Bombo.
Maybe it was a coincidence that South Sudanese were brought to Bombo, where there were people who are sometimes known as Sudanese, and specifically sometimes as Nubians. And we quickly found out that among the Nubians, their families still trace their origins in South Sudan. Some of them will tell you they are Bari and even what clan. There are a lot who say they are of the Logura clan, which is my clan.
These Sudanese are now recognized as Nubians, which is listed as one of Uganda's nationalities, and all converted to Islam. Noah says, aside from the fact that his ancestors came from the Bari ethnic group in Central Equatorial Region, nothing remains in them of the Bari culture. Musa agrees.
The culture is lost. The names are lost. If you look at our setup here in Bombo, the Nubian community, a child is given one name, and it's a religious name. Say, if you are Mustafa and your father is Abbas, automatically you become Mustafa Abbas.
Noah fears that as people adapt new identities and cultures, future generations will lose interest and sever ties with their ancestral home. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Apiku in Kampala, Uganda.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. What does a South Sudanese embassy official think about the life and death of Cuban leader Fidel Castro? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how would you like to be remembered?
I would like to remember that someone who gave back to society, as someone who touched lives and helped others.
I would like people to remember me by leaving a positive legacy as a hallmark, you know, easing the pains of people who are suffering, you know, like giving that compassionate and passionate care to them.
I would like to be remembered as someone who actually made an impact in my own small ways, whether it is that I helped someone in life or I just, even if it is just one individual, something small.
I would want to be remembered as a good citizen of my country one day. Well, it's very important to do the right thing because seeing what's going on, we wish there are many good people out there who would want to do the right thing in this country.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
Starting December 1st, join South Sudan in Focus host John Tanza and members of the South Sudanese community for a discussion about how hate speech is threatening to undermine coexistence among South Sudanese, both at home and abroad.
We are all South Sudanese, and there is no way we can make it without each other. We are all in the same boat. Either we sing together or we are safe together.
If we keep on saying that we want revenge, then this hate is not going to stop.
Your degree is a responsibility to pass on to the next generation.
The conversations amongst the elders really influence the younger generations that are following
the way we communicate with each other.
Tune in to South Sudan in Focus Monday through Friday to hear voices from home and the diaspora discussing hate speech and its implications on VOA Africa.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The government of Cuba has announced a 9-day period of mourning for Fidel Castro, the 90-year-old revolutionary leader who ruled the small Caribbean island for decades, died on Friday. His death was met with both celebration and mourning around the world. Here in Washington, Ambassador Gordon Boy, Consular and Diaspora Affairs Representative for the South Sudan Embassy, called Castro a hero, a friend, and a leader in the struggle for South Sudan's independence.
Cuba supported the SPLM, SPLA with military, with experts in fighting. It was the reason they sent a lot of Cuban experts to SPLA headquarters in Bilfarm to train the Red Army and the SPLA soldiers. So it left to me the first time we knew about the revolution or a revolutionary struggle was because of the Fidel and the legacy from the Cuban teachers in Bilfarm in 1985. So that was the impression left to me in early age that there were revolutionary people fighting colonialism, fighting for their rights. And then this is where I began to know Fidel Castro, people like Nelson Mandela, and there are other revolutionaries like Mao Zedong of China.
You know, one South Sudanese diaspora member called him a hero, and another one just simply a friend of South Sudan. What is it about Castro that has left such a positive mark on so many South Sudanese?
Because he trained us, because he gave us weapons to fight for our freedom. At that time, we had only a few friends in the world in 1983, 84, 85. So Cuba was one of the first countries that supported us militarily. Without the support, I don't think that we could have even achieved what we achieved in 2011. So we really appreciate what he did by helping us militarily to form the SPLM, SPLA, which eventually ended up being a very formidable liberation movement and then ended up achieving the aspiration of the people of South Sudan. That is the reason a lot of South Sudanese really felt they believe that Fidel Castro is their hero and is one of the people we should even give a medal. Although he's dead, we should give him a medal for contributing to our liberation struggle, like what he did in 1985, supplying weapons and also taking our boys to Cuba to be trained in all fields. So we have now medical doctors in South Sudan trained by the Cubans. We have experts, people who can, engineers trained by the Cubans. Even up to now, we have more than 45 students in Cuba being doctors. And this way, we believe that Fidel Castro really contributed to our liberation struggle and is our hero.
But Castro was a very controversial figure. Some saw him as a defender of the poor and a friend, as you just said, but others see him as someone who took away the rights of his own people. What is your reaction to that?
To me, he supported us to fight for our freedom. So whoever is saying that is accusing him because of his domestic politics. To me, that is not a concern. But my concern was the support he gave not only to us, but to the entire liberation movements in Africa to fight for their freedom.
That was Ambassador Gordon Boy, Consular and Diaspora Affairs Representative for the South Sudan Embassy of North America. He was speaking to me earlier today in Washington. The United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, says it confirmed at least 6 new cases of measles last week among internally displaced persons living in Wau. A UNICEF field officer says the agency has begun a campaign to vaccinate more than 17,000 children against measles in the area. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
Rahman says this is the first time UNICEF has confirmed cases of measles among IDPs who have been displaced from their homes since June.
We had sent some sample suspected measles cases to Juba together with the ministry to get confirmation. And we got this the start of this week confirmed cases of 6 samples were tested positive for the measles.
Rahman says they are working in collaboration with the state health officials in Wau, the French medical charity MSF, and the World Health Organization to vaccinate thousands of children in more than 5 IDP camps across Wau town.
And our target is to reach little above 17,000 children of up to 15 years of age. And then also we are, together with the Ministry of Health, local Ministry of Health here, we are also planning to have a wider campaign for general population of Wau municipality in very near future. But since the cases were mainly coming from the displacement sites, our target would be on the displacement site.
Rahman is urging parents to support the vaccination campaign to prevent the spread of measles to other areas. Speaking in Arabic, state health official Salah Abulgasim says Ministry of Health and NGO officials are working to make sure that all children in Wau are vaccinated to eliminate any chance of measles cases spreading to larger community.
These cases could spread to other places if they are not vaccinated immediately. That is why we are still planning to have a vaccination campaign targeting the whole population within Wau town.
Flavia Bernard is a nurse working with IOM and leading the campaign among the IDPs in the protection of civilian site run by the Catholic Church in Wau. Bernard says mothers should not be afraid to bring their children in for a vaccination shot during the 2 days campaign.
Actually, because it is an emergency outbreak, yes, we are going to do the campaign for 2 days. And if we did not meet our target, it means that there will be more outbreak.
The last outbreak of measles in South Sudan was reported in April among IDPs in Bantu. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
And that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Kuliko Jana by Sauti Sol featuring the Red Fourth Chorus.
Bwana ni mokozi wangu, tena ni kiongozi wangu, ananipenda leo kuliko jana. Baraka zake hazikwishi, si kama binadamu abadilikie, ananipenda leo kuliko jana. Kuomba Mungu uwasamehe, wangalijua jinsi unavyonipenda mimi wasingenisema. Na maadui wangu ninawaombe maisha marefu, wazidi kukuona ukinibariki. Ujue binadamu ni watu ajabu sana, walimukana Yesu mara tatu kabla jogo kuwika. Ujue binadamu ni watu ajabu sana, walimsulubisha Yesu Masia bila kusita. Ona Bwana ni mokozi wangu, tena ni kiongozi wangu, ananipenda leo kuliko jana. Si kama binadamu abadilikie, ananipenda leo kuliko jana. Kuliko jana, kuliko jana, Yesu nipende leo kuliko jana. Kuliko jana, kuliko jana, Yesu nipende.
We've been listening to Sauti Sol and the Red Fourth Chorus with the song Kuliko Jana. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.